I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Oscar night, Iranians were overjoyed after learning that A Separation won for Best Foreign Film. The award and the film gave Iranians a reason to come together and celebrate their culture. It was a moment for the media to focus on culture rather than nuclear weapons and the possibility of war. Before reaching Hollywood, A Separation won more than 70 international awards. It's a drama about a married couple faced with a difficult decision: to improve the life of their child by moving to another country, or to stay in Iran and look after a parent who has Alzheimer's and needs 24/7 care. During his acceptance speech at the Oscars, A Separation director Asghar Farhadi said, quote, "At this time, many Iranians all over the world are watching us, and I imagine them to be very happy. They're happy not just because of an important award or a film or filmmaker, but because at the time when talk of war, intimidation, and aggression is exchanged between politicians, the name of their country, Iran, is spoken here through her glorious culture, a rich and ancient culture that has been hidden under the heavy dust of politics. I proudly offer this award to the people of my country, a people who respect all cultures and civilizations and despise hostility and resentment." So on today's Your Call, we are talking about the importance of getting to know a culture beyond nuclear weapons and war. How can we learn about Iran outside of the official narratives set by the governments of Iran, the United States, and Israel? And how can culture and art bridge the divide between these nations? Susan Tamasebi has been a women's rights and civil society activist for nearly two decades. Susan is a founding member of the award-winning 1 Million Signatures campaign, which collects signatures of Iranians around the world who support an end to gender-biased laws in Iran. And she joins us from Cairo, Egypt. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. Thank you. We're also joined by Taraj Darai. He is professor in the history of Iran and the Persianite world and the associate director of the Center for Persian Studies and Culture at the University of Irvine. And he joins us from Irvine. Hi, Taraj. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much for the invitation.
It's great to have you. And in studio, we're joined by Amir. He is a journalist, a human rights activist, and co-author of the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise. Hi, Amir. Thanks for coming back.
Hello there. Thank you.
Great to have you. Well, Happy New Year to all of you, and Happy New Year to all of our Iranian listeners. The New Year was last Monday. Amir, I want to start off with you. You've seen A Separation. Why do you think it has captured the attention of so many people? Obviously, it won the Oscar, which is a big deal. But it is getting a lot of attention, and it's, well, at least trying to shift the conversation to culture rather than things like nuclear weapons.
I think the beauty of it is the intimacy and warmth of it, that you move into an Iranian family's home. You're not seeing them from the outside. You're seeing them from the inside. And you get to see them in terms of, not in terms of politics, but in terms of their relationship, the most intense ones, your relationship with the daughter, sort of wife and husband, of grandfather. And that's the heart of it. That's where culture is produced, at the level of the family at some levels. And so I think the taking people there took them to a different Iran.
And what would you add to that, Taraj?
Well, I think to follow what he said, this idea of, you know, in the West trying to essentialize some of these countries in terms of a single or dual issue, such as, you know, the bomb and, you know, rhetoric vis-a-vis Iran and Israel, that's all or most things that people hear or see from Iran, or which the images that you get, these blurbs of, you know, 100 people or 200 people being angry and chanting death to this and that. Here you see something very different, lives of people that are very much similar to most people around the world. And that gives it this human value, as it was just said, you know, and it makes people actually think that they're not different from people halfway around the world.
Right. And in this country, we often say we don't learn about another country until the U.S. invades, like Iraq and Afghanistan. And then you start to learn about the country. Susan, what are your thoughts about the power of learning about a country's culture and being sort of taken into their everyday lives?
Well, I should say that I'm also American. I mean, by birth, I'm also American. I'm half American and half Iranian. And this movie was especially important for me because I kept thinking about the American side of my family that doesn't know very much about the Iranian side of my family. And I think that this misunderstanding has been perpetuated over decades, really. But I find the Iranian side of my family probably knows a lot more about life in America than the American side of my family. And so I like this film because I think that it managed to show the world what it's like to be Iranian, and it, at least for me and people of my that I'm connected with in Iran and my family and my friends, it managed to depict reality, at least the reality of part of Iranian life. And it was interesting to me because it really talked about our common humanity. A family struggling to keep itself together, to address the needs of a young child, that you know, a teenager that's growing up, and a father that's dealing with serious illness. And, you know, these are very common issues that cut across cultural divides that people deal with on a day-to-day basis. So I think in that respect, it managed to strike a chord with both cultures. And, you know, for me, it was interesting and valuable in the sense that it broke a lot of the stereotypes that exist about Iranian society.
Well, and talk a little bit about that. What are some of the stereotypes the American side of your family has about Iran?
I think they generally, I don't want to generalize because I think that, you know, that they also cut across the sort of the spectrum that exists in the U.S. But I'll talk about what I think the stereotypes that exist about Iran are. And, you know, I should say, vast migration of Iranians to the U.S., especially over the last 30 years, has managed to break up stereotypes. But the way that we're represented in film and popular culture tends to be very negative. And I think the image that people have of Iran, maybe not so much of Iranians, but of Iran, is this black place, this hole where, you know, that you can't really envision any semblance of normalcy or normal life, that women are persecuted. I mean, I fight for women's rights, but I think that the existence of Iran is very much extreme and black in Western society. So I think that this film did a lot in terms of breaking that image and reminding us that, you know, in the end, we're all human and we aspire to have a better life.
And Amir, with your book, the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise, you traveled around the U.S. It got an incredible reception in Europe, especially in Germany. Mm-hmm. In your travels and the conversations you've had with people about your book, which is about the uprising during the election, what did you learn about the way people perceive Iran and Iranians?
Well, the heroine in our story is an Iranian woman, Zahra. And I think people are struck by how bold she can be, how she's not held back by bureaucracy. She's not held back by, you know, by all these threats. In a way, a lot of Susan and a lot of other activists who've been on the ground in Iran, you know, people in Iran are challenging the government. They are fighting for a different set of values. And I think the confusion arises when we think of governments and the people as the same. There is tremendous ferment in Iran at the moment. We saw it with the 2009 protests. And one of the things that was so powerful to me was that the Iranian people are sort of breaking from this image that equates Iran with death. All the time. I mean, Iranian as terrorist, Iranian as hostage taker. Well, was Neda a terrorist? Was she a hostage taker? Obviously not. And, you know, within our families, there's a lot of love in Iranian culture. I mean, look at what holds these families together. Look at what's held us through this revolution. It's love. So I think what I loved about separation is that even the conflict there is about love. It's between love for your father, love for your wife in the case of the husband, and love for your child. And how do you divide yourself between all these loves? And you can't. I mean, part of being Iranian is that you just, you know, it's just love. And that's what I love about these stories that are coming out. It's the love, the ferocity of the Iranian people's love. Not hate, not war, not enmity.
Well, it's also amazing that you even have to say that there is love within our culture. That should be kind of a given. But Taraj, I saw a separation last night in San Rafael and sat next to a group of six people and talked to them after the film. And it was fascinating because they said they really didn't know much about Iran before this film. And they were under the impression that every woman in Iran wore a black chador. And they were shocked to see that women were fashionable and had pretty scarves. They didn't realize that some Iranians had fair skin and even red hair. The main character had red hair and fair skin. They also said they live just like us. And they said, but the media never shows you sort of driving down the road or eating or taking your daughter to school or giving your father a hug. And they said, we feel really weird even saying that it made us realize they live just like us, but we never see this in the media. Can you talk about that, Taraj?
Sure. I mean, this is part of, again, as I mentioned, essentializing some of these cultures. As Amir also mentioned, you know, when I teach several courses on Iranian history and civilization, one of my graduate students tells me jokingly that, you know, I had no idea about these things. And, you know, I took classes and read and, you know, learned about these things. My grandma always asks me, why are these people always angry? Mm. I mean, this is in a joking way, because that's all that you see in the media. Be it from, you know, films such as Stoning of Soraya. Again, I have no justification for what the government in Iran does. Certainly, you know, I'm in disagreement with many of their policies. But that's not all that is happening, all the way to the movie 300, which I actually wrote something on it as well. It's from 2,500 years ago. These people are just angry, and they're just doing, you know, they're committed to violence. That's not really the case. And it's really good to have films as such that brings this human touch, you know, to these issues. And also, I think, you know, when people start reading about literature and, you know, certainly film, I think, has a huge influence on a population that starts as reading less and less. So media is quite important, but I think books such as Amir's book, you know, is very important for people to go around and give another view of how people actually live and are.
It must be interesting for you to have these dialogues with your students and hear about their misconceptions.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I understand now why I'm teaching this course beside my, you know, due to the university. It's actually people end up seeing a film. Sometimes I teach a history of Iran through film since revolution. That's really different for them from what they see on, you know, let's say CNN, forget about the other networks on TV, of what Iranians are. On TV, they're all wearing black chadors, they're all angry, or you have just angry men, and they're, of course, confronting the U.S. That's all that they can get from the TV, really.
And that is Taraj Daryahi. He is a professor in the history of Iran and the Persianite world at UC Irvine. We're joined by Amir, a journalist, a human rights activist, and co-author of the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise. Susan Tamasebi has been a women's rights and civil society activist for nearly two decades, and she's joining us from Cairo. She's a founder of the award-winning 1 Million Signatures campaign, which is collecting signatures from people who support an end to gender-biased laws in Iran. And we'd love to hear from you. We're talking today about the importance of getting to know a country through its culture, through the lens of culture. In the case of Iran, all we hear about for the most part is nuclear weapons. Will Israel bomb Iran? That was the cover of the New York Times magazine a month or so ago. So let's talk about the importance of getting to know a country's culture. And what do you know about Iran? What don't you know about Iran? What would you like to know about Iran? And if you've seen a separation, what was your response to it? It really gave you a window into everyday life, things that we all grapple with, older parents dealing with something like Alzheimer's. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. So, Susan, you have such an interesting background here talking about these questions because you're half American, half Iranian, and you're now living in Cairo. So, when you think about trying to teach people something about Iranian culture beyond nuclear weapons and war, what is it that you really want to focus on, and how do you start that dialogue?
Well, I should first correct what you said about me living in Cairo. I'm only visiting in Cairo.
Oh, you're
Cairo,
visiting. Okay. So do you live
in... It's a lovely city, and it reminds me very much of Iran. So
you actually live in the States.
I'm living now in the States,
okay.
Yes, and I've lived pretty much an equal part in both countries, in Iran and the U.S. throughout my life. I think that what's happening in terms of this discourse with respect to war and the nuclear issue is very similar to the discourse that your two other guests, Amir and Turaj, actually mentioned, in terms of creating this very monolithic image of Iran, that it's, you know, that these are angry, radical, crazy people that are trying to destroy the world, and our sense of the of what the world should be, our sense of security, and they're going to now do it with nuclear weapons. And I think that this is why movies like this are so important, because they bring that human aspect to our image of a place that we think that where the people are just trying to destroy our concept of normalcy, our humanity, our peace of mind. And so I think to make this, to make the Iran threat a credible threat, I mean, as it's being presented in the media and by many politicians, we need to do it in sound bites, or they need to do it in sound bites, and they need to present and sustain this image of that these, you know, these people are something other than human, they're different, that they're a threat. And this is exactly how this issue of war and sanctions is being presented. But I'd like to shed a more humane approach on this discussion. I mean, not only through the lens of a movie Separation, but I want to point out that some of our colleagues inside of Iran, for International Women's Day, videotaped messages about how they oppose war and why they oppose war. And it's lovely. It's about, they did 13 messages. These are activists working on women's rights in Iran, and they talk about why they're opposed to war, and to sort of cutting through the jargon of politicians on both sides of the table, whether it's the U.S. side or many sides of the table, whether it's the U.S. side or the Israeli side or the Iranian side, and talking about how war impacts the individual lives of people and how people on the receiving end are in fact human, and they're trying to create a world very similar across these political sort of discourses that and I would recommend that your viewers go and take a look at this, and I'll give you the address of our of the site of the campaign. It's the address is we-change.org. And if they go to English, if they hit the English button there, they'll see the videos prominently on there, and the videos have subtitles in English, so I think that you can connect on a very human level to some of these activists who are extremely worried about the possibility of war.
And I'm glad you brought this up, because social media can really play a role here in connecting the people and to get beyond the government propaganda.
Exactly. I mean, I think that it ends up being probably the only medium at the disposal of people, and especially people who don't have access to official media or
right.
the media that reaches the masses.
Well, let's hear from a caller. Let's hear from Sol in Oakland. Hi, Sol. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. The thing, I saw the movie a while ago, and the thing that really impressed me and made me think very differently about what I knew about Iran, I knew that Iran was not an Arabic country, that is Persian, and they spoke Farsi. And I don't know what their original religion was. I thought I might may be mistaken about this, that it was something like Zoroastrian. I could be totally off the wall there. But the thing that amazed me was that they'd internalized the teachings of Islam to such an extent that the characters seemed all to be leading very ethical lives. This is so different from our American culture, where we're not so focused, or we don't seem to have the principles of spirituality or the seeking of truth so incorporated into our lives, even those of us who are not religious but just, you know, aspire to be ethical beings. And the characters in the movie seem to apply that. The importance of truth was very amazing for me to see about their culture.
Thank you for the comment, Amir.
That beautiful comment. I think one thing to keep in mind is that the Iranian government is actually guilty in many ways of using Islam for the most preposterous and in the most preposterous and horrible ways. Mm. And so much of the impression that the world gets of Iran and of Islam is through the government. So I think, again, coming back to separation or the work that so many teachers are doing in America, like Professor Daryai or Susan's work, is that we get to connect with Iran through a different lens, through a different prism. So that to me is the heart of it. We have to be very careful about what it is that we're looking at Iran through, whose prism, and that has to be constantly in front of our eyes.
The state media actually changed the acceptance speech from Asghar Farahi. They said, quote, "I proudly offer," they said, he said this, "I proudly offer this award to the people of my country who, despite all the tensions and hostility between Iran and the West over Iran's nuclear program, respect all cultures and civilizations." What he actually said is, "I proudly offer this award to the people of my country, the people who respect all cultures and civilizations and despise hostility and resentment."
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, part of the problem is here, but part of it is in Iran. Mm. Since 1979, the Islamic Republic has constantly been sort of beating the drums of anti-Americanism. And you sometimes wonder, if you were to take Israel and America away from them, if they didn't have their great Satan, what would they do? You know, what would they offer the Iranian people? And so this culture of hatred and enmity is, part of the reason we have to deal with it as Iranians outside Iran is because of what our government has been doing inside Iran. So I wouldn't say it's just the American media or just the U.S. and Israeli governments. The Iranian government has a role in this too.
Right, because in your book you clearly talk about how the regime represses protesters. I just found a piece written recently from Hadi Gaimi, mm-hmm. executive director of the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran, Iranian cinema acclaimed abroad, under siege at home, talking about how many filmmakers are in prison. In fact, more than 50 political prisoners congratulated the director Asghar Farhadi for winning the Oscar.
Yeah, that was amazing. What is stunning is that almost, I think, a week or two before Farhadi's award, the House of Cinema in Iran was closed. So that gives you an idea of the undertows.
And what about that, Taraj? What about trying to clearly explain what is happening on the ground and how the regime is repressing protesters? Because in the larger dialogue with people who are opposed to an invasion, they tend to ignore what is going on the ground in Iran. So it's almost like, you know, you can be opposed to an invasion, but you can also be opposed to the regime, and that doesn't always make it into the conversation.
I should say that I'm certainly against the war, any sort of, you know, intrusion into the development of that country's history, except with NGOs and groups such as Susan's group and, you know, what Amir is doing. As Iranians and those who are interested in this cause can, of course, try to influence this process from outside. Iran has had a complex history, hasn't been colonized exactly, but that's how I explain it to my students. In the 18th, 19th century, it has been really under the influence of the Russians and then the British, and since, you know.
And hold that thought, Taraj. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we have to take a quick break.
Sure.
And we'll come back right after this. This is really important to talk about this history. You can join us at 866-798-8255. We're talking about the importance of learning about a country like Iran through its cultural lens rather than nuclear weapons and war. We'll be back after this.
Local public radio, KALW, San Francisco. Students in high schools all around the Bay Area are preparing for careers in hospitality, law, health science, and many other fields. If you would like to help develop the talents of young people in the Bay Area, please consider taking on a summer student intern at your local business or nonprofit. And if you can't host an intern but still want to help, you can think about sponsoring an internship. All of the details on summer internship programs are available on our website, kalw.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there, maybe share a few of the shows with your friends, and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we will mark Cesar Chavez's upcoming birthday by talking about the history of the United Farm Workers with Frank Barducci. He's author of Trampling Out the Vintage, Cesar Chavez and the Two Souls of the United Farm Workers. What can we learn from recent victories? And there have been many. What issues are farm workers organizing around today? And we're also putting shows together about foreclosures. And we'll have a debate about President Obama's record thus far on the environment, health care, and U.S. foreign policy. Today we are talking about Iran, really, speaking of U.S. foreign policy, and we're talking about the importance of really getting to know a culture or a country through the lens of its culture and history rather than nuclear weapons and war, because from the most part, that's all we get in the American media. And we're talking about a separation. It won for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars. Iranians around the world stayed up very late to watch the Oscars. They were overjoyed, thinking maybe the media for just a couple of days will focus on our country and the people rather than nukes and war. So if you saw a separation, we'd love to hear from you. And what are your thoughts on the importance of learning about a culture? If there's another movie you saw about Iran or an art exhibit, we've got a couple announcements to make about films coming up and an art exhibit opening this weekend. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a message at yourcallradio.org. Or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Susan Tomasebi. She's a women's rights and civil society activist currently in Cairo. She's a founding member of the award-winning 1 Million Signatures campaign. They collect signatures to end gender-biased laws in Iran. She lives in the state. She's also lived in Iran. We're also joined by Taraj Darayi. He's professor in the history of Iran and the Persianite world at UC Irvine. And Amir is a journalist, human rights activist, and co-author of the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise. And before the break, Taraj, we were just talking about the importance of really understanding Iran's complex history and talking about the fact that you can be obviously opposed to the invasion, but also to really expose the oppression that people in Iran are facing under Ahmadinejad and the current Iranian regime.
Yes, I was saying, you know, 18th, 19th century, the Russians and the British had a lot of say and influenced the country. And in the, you know, mid-20th century, there was a U.S.-backed coup in Iran. Hence, there is, of course, this general animosity or sort of thought that the foreigners were controlling this country. And, of course, with the revolution, mm-hmm. this was sort of a response to this issue. Now, I should say, yes, the revolution took place. But as we can see, the people of Iran themselves have suffered at the hand of what has happened. Certainly after the 2009 election, I certainly have no way of any defense of what the government is doing to that, to its own people, regardless of Iran's really horrible history vis-a-vis, you know, what the, let's say, colonial powers or U.S. has done in Iran. I mean, the last chance Iran had for a genuine democratic process was in 1953. The government was overthrown by the U.S., and now U.S. talks about democracy. It's kind of really strange to, you know, harp this, you know, mantra to the Iranian people when it was the American government who overthrew them.
Right.
And here is the result of it. What we see now is a backlash towards that, but then the Iranian people are now suffering at the hand of their own government. Mm. With what is going on.
You know, that is such a good point because you come full circle. Mm-hmm. And again, this rarely gets mentioned in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Amir.
You know, it's when the revolution happened, I was 12 years old and I was a kid in Iran. Mm-hmm. And the mantra was neither East nor West Islamic Republic. Mm-hmm. And I think 30 years later, my generation, Turaj, Susan, all of us, in a sense, were the response to that, where no, both East and West, you know, we're Iranians. And so our country's always been a crossroad of cultures, of coming and connection and all of this. And so what's so ironic about separation, and this it, not only at the level of the family, but at the level of America and Iran, is that here you have a film titled Separation, but it's getting recognized in the U.S. and getting... So there is a certain irony to all of this, because there is also a profound connection between our cultures. Mm. And as Turaj was mentioning, there is a universality to it. Susan is Iranian and American. Mm-hmm. You know, I've grown up half my life in America. So many Americans have given us homes and sanctuaries and a chance to start life. So there's a love, again, I come back to that, that holds through this. And, you know, even between Iran and Israel, I mean, there's now a Facebook campaign mm-hmm. in Israel where Israelis are saying, we love Iranians, we mm-hmm. don't want war. I mean, or for instance, the pirate issue where the U.S. U.S. Fifth Fleet in the Persian Gulf, everyone thinks they were there for a war, right? What did they end up doing? Saving a Persian fisherman from Somali pirates and putting fuel and food in the boat and sending it back to Iran in violation of American sanctions. You know, that's where the Pentagon's budget went for a brief moment. So we're catching glimpses of the connections, too.
And you wrote a piece about that.
I did, because it's like, well, you know, everybody says, you know, acts of God are always about destruction. Mm. Well, why couldn't acts of God be about friendship and love and connection? Mm. You know, so there's a reclamation that's going on underneath it all.
Mm. We have an email from Danielle. She says, I had the good fortune of meeting Iranian friends while in college on the East Coast. They were my fellow classmates, just regular people from another country. Imagine that. I feel fortunate to have gone to a university where the student body was diverse, Clark University in Massachusetts. Thanks for the email, Danielle. And let's hear from Persis Karim. He's calling in. He's a poet and professor at San Jose State. And
I'm sorry.
And the author of two anthologies on Iranian-American literature, Let Me Tell You Where I've Been, New Writing by Women of the Iranian Diaspora and a World Between. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for a great topic. I think it's very timely. Like many of your guests, I share a family in Iran and a family here in America. So one of the things about that movie that I think is so important is the idea that immigration has dominated many families' lives in Iran for three decades. And I think the idea of not just a separation of marriage, but also the idea that families are divided partly because they're looking for a future for their children. So I'm a product of an immigrant family, and I have cousins who live all over the world on four different continents because of 1979. So mm-hmm. I think one of the things that Americans often don't realize is that the 79 revolution was catastrophic on many levels because it divided whole families across the globe. So I have a cousin who lives in Europe, one who lives in Canada, one who lives in Asia, and one who lives in Iran, all from the same family. So I wanted to sort of point that out as one of the principal metaphors of the movie isn't just the separation between a husband and a wife.
Yes, such a good point. And what are you? What's your reaction as a professor at San Jose State with students and their opinions or maybe misconceptions about Iran?
I know Turaj and Amir, and I want to say hello to them and say thank you for hosting them, because I think one of the things that we are really struggling with as professors is to insert the voice of Iranian culture and Iranian people in a conversation that's dominated by media headlines, which is really dominated by governmental rhetoric. So whenever I can, I'm a literature professor, I try to show movies and have my students read books that both engage a humane view of Iran, but also a critical view of the Iranian government. So, for example, I'm teaching a class this semester on Middle Eastern literature, and I'm teaching Women Without Men, which is a novel by a contemporary Iranian writer who lives in exile here in California. Mm. And I think one of the things that is problematic is also that students are exposed either to the sort of dark image that one of your guests spoke to, and more recently there's this series on TV called The Shahs of Sunset, which is a, you know, obnoxious reality show with very rich, hyper-rich Iranians who are sort of the Shah era. So there's a kind of polarity between, you know, these very dark images of a zealous, religious Iran and then, you know, rich Iranians who live here, rather than the sort of everyday Iranian person who's struggling to get by. And I just wanted to recommend one movie that I want to encourage people to see. It's not in public distribution just yet, but it's called Dog Sweat, and I just showed it at my campus a month ago, and it's clandestinely filmed in Iran, and you actually had him on your show.
Right. A couple of months back, I believe.
Yeah, Hossein Keshavarz. And it's a wonderful movie about young people in Iran, because I think that's an image of Iran that we don't see, which is that 60% of the population is under the age of probably 35, and they're struggling between wanting to have connections with the outside world and to live a less sort of politicized existence, but also struggling to have freedom. And that movie really speaks to the experience of young people, and it's a wonderful depiction of how frustrating it must be to be a young person with ambition and a desire to connect to the outside world.
It's such a great point. And thank you so much for calling in, Persis. We'll put links to your work at our website. Persis Karim, she's a poet and professor at San Jose State and the author of two anthologies on Iranian-American literature, Let Me Tell You Where I've Been, New Writing by Women of the Iranian Diaspora and A World Between. Thank you so much. And you brought up such a great point. And Susan, I'm wondering if you can talk about this, because it seems like you're being pulled in so many directions. You're trying to show the world a different view of Iran and to get the art and the culture out there. And for example, you working on this 1 million signatures campaign to end gender bias laws in Iran. And then you also want to give people in Iran a voice. So, I mean, how are you grappling with all of that? And can you talk specifically about women? I was just looking at an article in The Guardian that says female protesters were beaten, raped, and intimidated in a post-election crackdown by the Iranian authorities. Silenced by stigma and fear, these women are now using social media to bear witness to the horror.
Well, I just want to say that just going back to what you discussed a little bit earlier, I just want to give an image of why Iranians were so happy with Asghar Farhadi's win. I mean, really, we were all watched this win and his very short and very powerful speech, and we were in tears. And this cut across the divides of time and space. I mean, whether you were in Iran or you were in the West, everybody stayed up to watch this. And I think people were happy about it because they want to give a positive image of Iran to the world. And whenever that happens, they're ecstatic and excited. And, you know, just it wasn't just about somebody winning an Oscar. And that certainly is something that everybody was very proud of. But it was about this film and the human image that it of Iran that it portrayed to the world. So I just want to say that. And I also want to point to this, you know, talking about this divide. For over 30 years, the discourse between Iran and the U.S. has been one of hate, expressed through governmental and mediums and also the media. But when 9/11 happened, Iran was the only place that witnessed a spontaneous vigil held by Iranian citizens expressing their concern and their regret for what had happened for the American public. I don't know how much attention that got in the American media. I was in Iran at the time. But for me, it was extremely powerful and very moving. And I think that, you know, in that sense, it shows that all this, that the Iranian generation, especially this younger generation, that's over 65% of Iranians, you know, are in their early 30s or less, really do relate to the West, and they do get beyond this hateful rhetoric and connect on a human level. And I'm not sure how much Americans and Westerners really realize that. And I think that if we promote this policy of war and sanctions, that's exactly what we're going to lose in the West, is we're going to lose a country that of a younger generation of Iranians, millions of Iranians who don't, not only don't hate the U.S., but actually care about American citizens and want to connect with them on a human level. Now, what you talk about in terms of wanting to show the human face of Iranians, but also giving their struggle a voice, I think this is, you know, this is the big challenge that exists for us. If you're a human rights activist, if you're a women's rights activist, you recognize that war is a catastrophe on a scale much larger, much grander than any sort of struggle that people are engaged in Iran. This is not to discount the struggle that's happening, because that is a very real struggle. The human rights violations are very serious human rights violations, and you want the international community, you want the world to pay attention and to condemn it and to show solidarity with the Iranian people, but not through war and not through sanctions, which can have a much more devastating impact on Iranians inside of Iran. And so I think that there is really, and I think that anti-war movement is stuck in this dilemma and this dichotomy of what do you do when people have taken the two opposite ends of this spectrum. Some you know, don't criticize Iran at all because they think that it justifies war. And clearly, in many of these countries, human rights situations have been used to justify aggression, which is just absolutely insane. And on the other hand, some people sort of only focus on the human rights abuses. But I think that there can, in fact, be a third way where you can oppose war, where you can oppose sanctions, and also stand with the Iranian people. But this opposition to war and sanctions shouldn't be used as a justification for war. And the opposition to war shouldn't be used as a justification by the Iranian government to continue doing what it does. And just I want to point out very quickly, and then I'll let you take a caller or get other opinions, but I want to point out to some of the very moving pieces of these videos that I talked about, that my colleagues still taped, and talk about how they really address this issue. Nafisa, my colleague, talks about how when we started the 1 million signatures campaign in her video, that we were a voice for dissent. And what happens is when you talk about war, the sound of war is so loud, it's so encompassing, that there is no room for the sound of change and dissent to be heard. Azadeh, my colleague, and these are all younger women who are young generation of Iranians who've already lived through 8 years of war. They've experienced it. So when they oppose war, they really know what they're talking about. Talks about how when she was young, and even though she lived in Tehran, she had to miss school because schools were shut down because of the war. And when she went back to school, she had forgotten the number three, because she'd been out of school for so long. And she talks about how she was so embarrassed as a child to have this happen to her. She was ashamed. And talks about the fear that people face during times of war, and how that fear really takes the childhood away from children. And that's why she was opposed to war.
And that is, Taraj, go ahead.
This is Taraj. I just want to echo what Susan was saying in terms of war. But first, Persis John, she's wonderful up there in Northern California. She's actually now heading the Iranian Studies program there. So it would be great if anyone is interested to contact her. I was just there last week discussing women, Iranian women in history. But in terms of war, I absolutely agree with Susan. War is not the answer. My parents' family are from the South. Some of my family got killed in the Iran-Iraq war. But I would never want to see anything that happened like what happened to the Iraqi people. I mean, Iraq is, as we say, it's free. I have students and some friends there. You know, civilization was destroyed. The city of Babylon is destroyed. Its museum was destroyed for the price of what we call now democracy. Of course, we have to see how that works out in Iraq. But hundreds of thousands of people were killed. I mean, human life. I have family in Iran, so I have a, you know, vested interest in this. Smart bombs, kill. Not smart bombs, kill. The country will, you know, it will be chaos. People will get killed. And, you know, worst comes to worst, a couple of bombs will fall and the government will just make it much more worse for the people there. And nothing will really get solved by, you know, destroying a couple of sites.
Well, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. We have a few callers on the line. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, and we'll try to get you on. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Stephen in San Francisco. Hi, Stephen.
Oh, hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that your listeners should know about a TV series that Link TV is producing called Bridge to Iran, which is presenting films from multiple points of view, Iranian points of view, both inside Iran and within the Iranian diaspora. Those films are streamed in high-definition video for free, in-depth interviews with the filmmakers, and these films, I think, really show, underscore that there is, you know, certainly not one Iranian point of view. There are many Iranian points of view, and using this medium of film to meet and to penetrate, really, Iranian culture, religion, I think your listeners would come away with a really expanded vision of what Iran is about.
Well,
you can Google that, Bridge to Iran, and it'll take you right there to the project website.
Great. Thank you so much. And we will put a link on our website. I also wanted to mention at the Human Rights Film Festival, starts Thursday at USF. It's free to 2350 Turk Boulevard at Masonic. On Saturday at 4:30, they'll be showing The Green Wave, which is about the uprising, the violent suppression of the protesters, and then what happened after. And Amir, you're familiar with this film, and you really go in depth about this in your book, Zahra's Paradise.
Yeah, well, I think one thing to bear in mind is that, again, Iranian culture is very separate from Iranian politics, and what filmmakers and artists and musicians have all been doing is affirming that culture in the face of this. And even if you go back 600 years, 700 years, Hafez, our greatest poet, has this line that kind of guides, and so I think of it as the Iranian constitution. And he says, plant the seeds of friendship, for they bring boundless joy. Uproot the sapling of enmity, for they bring boundless sorrow. So there is a streak in Iranian culture that if we want to look for it, we will find, and it's powerful, and it exists at the level of people everywhere. So I hope that this conversation and these similar things will help us draw the positive out rather than constantly focus on the negative.
What is the status of the uprising and the stories you told in your book, the people's stories?
It's far from over. I mean, I think those of us who are active human rights campaigners know that, you know, the anniversary of the uprising is coming up. Mm-hmm. United for Iran and other human rights organizations are getting ready to once again focus the attention. And Amnesty International has been launching various campaigns in defense of the kids who are in Evin prison right now. Majid Tavakkoli, student leader, is still in Evin prison. Nasrin Sotoudeh, human rights lawyer, in Evin prison. Bahar, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And it's so, one of the sad things about this war stuff is that it's completely shifted attention away from Evin prison and right. The Iranian judiciary and what it's been doing. So thank you for asking that question, Rose.
And we have a couple of emails. Phyllis writes, thanks for the show. I'd like to share the most insightful comment I've heard from an Iranian in response to the film A Separation. She said, quote, if they decide to bomb us, at least they will know who it is they are bombing. Ooh. Her poignant comment sums up the tragedy of current lacks in understanding between peoples of the two countries, which this film seeks to begin to remedy. I heard this on another program discussing the film. It's wonderful that the film won the Oscar. I saw the film. I find it to be a magnificently authentic view of Iranian culture. Another listener, Stuart, says, please talk about the court system we saw in the film. It's very different from ours, specifically how the court deals with divorce. Who'd like to take that one? Taraj or Susan?
I could, but Taraj. Maybe Susan is, if she wants to, otherwise I could.
Susan?
Yes.
Well, I haven't had any experience with divorce court. Yes, I mean, I think that it is a little bit different. I think that, you know, it's a mix. You can get judges who are very sort of sympathetic, and you can get judges who are not sympathetic. And what we're fighting for and what we're trying to do is change laws that make it very difficult for women to get divorces. You know, obviously this was a family that had, you know, where there was mutual respect in this family. And I think that you see this trend going towards this in Iran, where the couple has a great deal of respect for one another. And, you know, if the wife doesn't want to remain in the marriage, then the husband sort of yields to her wishes. But we also have
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Laws that make it very difficult for women to get a divorce if the husband doesn't want to get a divorce.
Right, and based on the film and the very few articles I've read, it seems very discriminatory, right? And you have to bring class into this.
You have to bring class into this? I'm
right.
Sorry? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. And I think what women are doing is that they're taking this into their own hands. I mean, obviously, the Iranian culture has changed quite a bit, and I'm probably, you know, it's far ahead of the laws that govern these relations. And Iranian people have been very creative, and so addressing some of these issues, for example, in the marriage contract, when they ask for the right to divorce or other things, they stipulate the laws by which they want to live their lives out. And this is, you know, this has become part of the culture for many people. But yes, it can be very difficult. It can be very, very difficult. And these are some of the things we're wanting to change. And just on the note that you mentioned with respect to war, I just want to refer just very quickly to what a colleague of mine said in her video message, and she said that we believe in a better world. We're trying to create equality. We want a more equal world. But with war, there's no equal world that you can envision, and basically an equal world doesn't smell like burnt flesh. So I just want to kind of put that out there and say that, you know, this struggle goes on, and we need time and space to achieve what we're trying to achieve. And, you know, the Iraqi people, for example, I think that they lost their chance at an Arab Spring.
Well, we had a listener call to say the Iranian regime has draconian laws when it comes to women and minorities. Another listener says it's crucial that Iranians, Americans, and Israelis demand that their governments begin talking directly to each other.
Absolutely. I agree. People should start talking to each other. Governments should talk. They shouldn't be just, you know, war of words and not talking to each other. Absolutely.
Taraj Darai is professor at UC Irvine. Amir is a journalist, co-author of the incredible graphic novel Zahra's Paradise. And Susan Tamasebi has been a women's rights and civil society activist for 2 decades. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How are farm workers organizing to claim their power in a global agricultural marketplace? On the next Jour Call, we'll have a conversation with Frank Bardicky, author of Trampling Out the Vintage, Cesar Chavez and the Two Souls of the United Farm Workers. We'll mark Cesar Chavez's upcoming birthday by talking about the history of the UFW and how it's changed over the years. What can we learn from recent victories? And what issues are farm workers organizing around today? It's Jour Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Jour Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Hi, this is Lauren Meltzer of City Visions. Tonight on our program, we're discussing sharks of the San Francisco Bay. How healthy are local shark populations, and what threats do these species encounter in the Bay's urban setting? What can sharks tell us about the health of the Bay's ecosystem? Should the Bay become a shark sanctuary? Join my co-host, Joseph Pache, for all you can learn about the resident sharks, tonight at 7 p.m. on City Visions, here on local public radio, KALW.
City Visions tonight at 7. Up next here at local public radio, the BBC's World Have Your Say. Following that at 12 noon from Radio Netherlands, it's The State We're In, and then this afternoon at 1, Alternative Radio. It's 11 o'clock, and this is KALW San Francisco, local public radio.
Hello, Ben James here. Welcome to World Have Your Say. It's the BBC discussion led by you.
You can continue down the road you are on, but we know where that leads. More broken dreams, more isolation, ever more distance between the people of North Korea and the dignity and the opportunity that they deserve.
President Obama says it's America's moral obligation to work towards nuclear disarmament. But does the US leader have any right to tell other countries to get rid of nuclear weapons when the Americans have thousands of their own? Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay to take part in the conversation. Also,
c'est une très bonne nouvelle pour l'Afrique en général et pour le Sénégal en particulier.
Senegal is a model of democracy, according to Nicolas Sarkozy. There, the election's been described as an example for Africa. Do you agree?